Today on the show, we discuss the Doomslayer's evil twin and the tragic tale of a lost paradise. Welcome to Lore Party, the podcast that explores the stories, characters, and universes of our favorite video games. I'm Connor.
And I'm Bruce.
And you probably thought we were done, didn't you?
We're back from hell.
We're back, baby. You thought that the Doom episodes were left behind in Season 7 of Lore Party. Well, guess again, because we got one more for you.
To drag you back down into the terrible deep.
We have been to places we thought we would never go. We have done things we thought we would never do. And we played the Ancient Gods Part 1 DLC of Doom Eternal. So we got some more to unwind for you.
Oh, yeah. We also played the first mission of that DLC on our Twitch channel, if you want to check that out.
That's right. It was a good time. It was just the right amount of stress mixed with the right amount of bloodshed. And, It was good times. Yeah, check that out.
Too bad we couldn't make it to the Blood Swamp.
We'll have to stream the Blood Swamp at some point. But Blood Swamps aside, we are here to talk about something pretty big and pretty interesting and pretty impactful to the Doomiverse that we learned about from the Ancient Gods DLC. And that is sort of the origin story behind Hell itself, but also kind of the King of Hell.
Yeah, absolutely. This DLC, and by extension, Doom 2016 and Doom Eternal, has been really just rewriting the entire lore mythos of the Doomiverse just completely on its head. And this one, again, even for a DLC, just completely flips what we had assumed for all this time about a lot of things.
Right. It spells out a lot of the details behind Hell is created. And we kind of had a cliffhanger ending at the conclusion of Ancient Gods Part 1. There's a bit of a shocker reveal that the Dark Lord himself, who has been referred to, kind of alluded to a few times throughout 2016 and Doom Eternal, just kind of vaguely as the Dark Lord, the granddaddy of all demons, the one above all. He was revealed at the end of the DLC, and he took the shape of basically a copy or a doppelganger of the Doomslayer. And so obviously the community, you and I as players, when we saw that, I'm sure we all had 100 questions running through our heads at the same time. Yeah. what do we do with this information? How do we make sense of that?
I know what you're thinking. It's his brother. It's
not.
I don't think that's it.
Yeah. Who knows? But we do have some theories, and we're here to discuss them today. We want to kind of dive into what we know about this mysterious figure, what we know about how Hell was created, and sort of what this all means for the broader Doomiverse.
Yeah, the story really is told in two parts. One is, of course, you are the Doomslayer, and you're kind of going up, funnily told by Samuel Hayden that he had to clean up the mess he made from the adventures of Doom Eternal, that he had to kind of go down and make sure that he could get the body of the Seraphim off this offshore research facility. But along the way, you're also being told of this, you know, through the Codex pages, of course, of the history of pretty much the universe and just kind of like a book of Genesis.
Right. And it kind of solidifies a few things we knew going into the Ancient Gods DLC, kind of things that were established in Doom Eternal. A few things that were solidified that we kind of know as fundamental facts of the canon. We know that the earthly plane that Bruce, you and I live on, that everyone listening to this lives on, as well as Hell and the heavenly realm of Erdak, all of those things, all those places and dimensions, they all stem from and were created by this one entity only known as the Father. So starting with the Father, if we go back far enough on the timeline, we'll basically see the father just sort of drifting through the void, right? That's where everything starts. It's just the father is this entity that has no discernible shape. It's just kind of aimlessly wandering through the vast black empty void.
Just drifting, just snowboard.
Yeah, just chilling out, minding his own business, not really thinking too hard about anything. But as he sort of just exists in one space for long enough, new life and new realities start to just branch off of him. And when the father stops drifting for just like a minute, like he just decides to take a breather, right? He leans up against a tree or whatever and, you know, catches his breath and rests for a minute. That's when Erdak happens. Just bingo. Right then.
By accident.
By accident. That's important. That's actually really cool because Erdak, when you see it in the game, when you see it in Doom Eternal, you think, holy shit, look at this place. It's so intricate and detailed and advanced and high technology, and it's mind-blowing. All of that was by accident. Erdak just happened.
It was a whole big oopsie daisy. It's heaven.
Yeah. Oops, I made a heaven. It's just the father just hung out for a second. He just stopped drifting for long enough for Erdak to just spring out of him, incidentally, like as a byproduct. And when Father realized what had happened, he's like, oh, I created a completely new self-sustained reality in this place called Erdak. And he decided he liked creating things. So
I guess I'll roll with it.
I'm going to roll with it, yeah. And so the Seraphs and the Makers were kind of his next creation. He made them to inhabit Erdak and assist him with what comes next.
So I really like this because, I mean, if you or I are a lot of people who were at least maybe brought up by the Judeo-Christian faith,
sure,
you're able to at least follow along a little pretty closely with how the Bible or the Torah kind of talks about this, of in the beginning, God created everything in 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, it just kind of makes the Father or God feel a little more, I don't know if the right word is human, but, you know, flawed.
Yeah, that's interesting to me because I actually had the opposite takeaway just because the cosmic nature of the Father and the Makers, they almost feel less human to me just by nature of how Erdak was created accidentally. Like humans usually have, I don't know. That's a good point though. Like I just thought the idea of Erdak being an accident and realities just being created by the Father without him even having to concentrate on it, just made me think of like, this is something I'll never understand or relate to. It's kind of so above the station of mortals that it felt so alien to me. But you're right in the sense that what we're about to get into, there are some ambitions and instances of hubris that are very human-like. So you do have a point. But that kind of brings us to the Father's next creation, which was kind of the first thing he would decide to make on purpose. Because again, Erdak was an accident. He thought, I'm going to actually try this time.
if I can make this backwater shit town without even trying, what if I really put my mind to it?
Yeah, so he spat into his palms and rubbed them together and really just hit the pavement running. And he created another realm called Jakad. And the Father set out to make this his greatest creation. He expected it to be superior even to Erdak. He would outdo himself. He was like, that was a rough draft. Erdak was my first stab at it.
It was a prototype.
Yeah,
it was a prototype.
Yeah, that was my first stab at it. I'm really swinging for the fences this time. And that's when he creates Jakad.
So with Jakad, he thought that it would be better than having a bunch of immortal seraphites there and wanted to create these very, like, I don't know what he was really thinking, and we can go into that, but first he wanted all of them to be kind of led by a primeval named Devoth.
Right.
And he was supposed to be kind of their leader, master of Jakad, to lead them to this greatness.
Right. Yeah, the inhabitants of Jakad were different from the inhabitants of Erdak, because in Erdak, obviously, the Makers and the Seraphim were immortal. They were kind of automatons who just served the Father. But for Jakad, the Father wanted the people to be a little more self-sufficient, I guess. So they were mortal beings. They didn't have the immortality of the Makers. But the the creature he made to lead them, like you mentioned, Devoth, he was immortal. Primeval, in the Codex, a primeval like Devoth is described as being so immensely powerful and important that only one of them can exist on any plane or dimension at any time. So Devoth was, for all intents and purposes, like the father's protege, really, and he was in charge of Jakkaad. But another thing about them was that they were created by the father to have limitless ambition. They were unrestrained. See, the Makers and the Seraphim had rules that they played by. They were like kind of bound by some restrictions, but the father wanted the people of Jakkaad to just strive for everything and, you know, not
yeah,
be
do
held
what,
back.
Do what works for you.
Exactly. They wanted to achieve greatness at any cost, and Devoth shared that goal with them. But the problem was that Devoth, being immortal, he wanted his people to have that too. He wanted his people to live forever, and he got really sick of watching them, you know, grow old and die, and he got fed up with that. And so he dedicated himself and basically the entire society of Jakkaad toward the goal, toward the ultimate goal of achieving immortality.
I do want to say, I feel like this is the father's second downfall here. Mm. Why would you make a realm that is to be led by someone who is immortal to a bunch of people who aren't mortal? I feel like this is, again, something that the father kind of has a lack of oversight on.
Sure. And that could speak to your point earlier about that's a pretty human failing. That's just that humanizes the father a little bit eerily enough. Like, this isn't something, this isn't an entity that would be easily humanized, but maybe that's one thing that, he didn't quite foresee. Maybe his thinking was that if the people of Jakkaad had a lifespan, sort of a ticking clock, that would motivate them more. That was like, hey, you're on borrowed time, so do the best you can with it. You know, use that ambition, use that drive. But Devoth had to be immortal to be there for the whole thing and move everything along and be in charge. That was probably his logic, but like you so astutely pointed out, it definitely backfired on him, because what happens next? Of course, it goes south.
Yeah, Devoth could not stop thinking about how all his people are just dying, and he just can't really get over that. And he kind of spends more time trying to have his people have immortality more than what this kind of vague, ambiguous greatness that the father wants. And you can really see kind of a parallel there, as we know that Devoth, you know, kind of like the Slayer, cares deeply for his people. You can kind of think about that with the Slayer.
Exactly. And that brings us to sort of the crux of the episode, is these parallels between Devoth, who, as we'll get into later, becomes the Dark Lord of Hell, and the Slayer, who, as we already know, is sort of the antithesis of demonkind. He's sort of the champion of humankind. Devoth and the Slayer have this one thing in common, where everything they do is motivated by the love they have and the defensive nature they have toward their chosen people.
They're a champion, they're a defender, a protector.
Exactly. For Devoth, the people of Jakkaad are his only concern, and to help them share in the gift of immortality that he has, he would sacrifice anything. There's nothing off the table for Devoth. Similarly, as we see throughout Doom Eternal especially, but pretty much all the Doom games, the Slayer is the same way toward humans, the people of Earth. Especially in Doom Eternal, nothing will get in his way. Nothing will stop him from doing whatever needs to be done.
Just so everyone's keeping score, because I don't know if everyone, well, I mean, if you're listening to this, you probably have played Doom, but just Erdek, Heaven, Seraphites, Angels, Jakkaad, Hell, Devoth, the Lucifer Devil, and demons are demons.
Yeah, demons, yeah, that hasn't changed. Yeah. And that makes the Slayer...
What does that mean?
Archangel Michael? I don't know.
I was thinking Archangel Michael. I don't know. Like, he's just a guy. Is he Jesus?
Sure.
Is he the father reborn?
That could be.
That's this is for another episode.
Yeah, this is going to get us in trouble. We're going to get boycotted. But no, you're right, though. But that does bring us to this question of, so we know the realm of Jakkaad and its leader, Devoth, but how does Jakkaad become hell? At this point in the story, Devoth is obviously, as we've established, obsessed with gaining mortality for his people. And needless to say, the father isn't happy with that. He sees this as a threat. He thinks Davoth is getting too big for his britches. He's my favorite child, but he's pissing me off. He's out of control. I can't, you know, tolerate this kind of threat. So what he did was the father basically locked Jakaad away from every other dimension, every other reality. Jakaad was isolated, trapped, and from there, the entire society. And remember, this was a realm superior to Erdak by all measurements. So the architecture, the culture, the technology of Jakaad was just unspeakably advanced and beautiful by every measure. After being abandoned by the father, Jakaad slowly and gradually devolves into a chaotic, ruined, corrupted shell of its former self, and it eventually becomes the domain.
The back of a metal album cover everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, it becomes a domain of anguish and suffering that metalheads think is badass and awesome, but it used to be so nice. It used to be such a nice neighborhood, Bruce. I'm serious. Like, Jakaad, hell used to be a beautiful place to raise a family, but back when they called it Jakaad, but it's just really gone to the dogs now. It's really sad.
And the father took all their funding away.
Ever since funding from the father dried up, this place has seen better days.
And then seeing what it looks like now, blood swamps, giant spires made out of spines and bones and skulls and shit. I mean, that really had to have taken a lot of chaos and effort and disdain and hatred and malice and destruction to kind of turn that on its head into this.
But also time. It also takes
it had time.
Yeah. They had time. Because you gotta remember, these events take place on a scale of linear time that is just ridiculous. Like, we're talking billions of years ago, probably.
Eons.
And it's sad because As we talked about already, Davoth was, you know, he cared as a, you know, primeval, you know, immortal lord of creation, basically. He cared about the people he was responsible for. Yeah, he had a good term. He was the champion of these people. And his motivation was fear that they would eventually go extinct. And his ambition drove him to a bad place, and that's what happened anyway. It ended up turning back on him. We've actually talked in other episodes about the hubris of chasing the greater good.
Yeah.
And I think that brings us to Davoth too. Like,
it's a continuing theme in this entire thing where it's just you have a villain or at least an antagonist who is expecting not to get screwed on shit that they do. And then all of a sudden.
Yeah. Davoth had noble intentions for the inhabitants of Jakaad, and he tried to lead them to the promised land, but they were punished for their ambition. And so Jakaad turns into hell, and, you know, over a long, long, long period of time, Davoth himself gets imprisoned in what's called a life sphere. The life sphere, as is explained in the Ancient Gods DLC, it's explained that it's capable of containing the essence of even an immensely powerful creature like a primeval, like Davoth. So he had to be trapped in a life sphere for eons and ages on end, and probably watch, or at least be, you know, vaguely aware of the process of his home, Jakaad, slowly devolving and degrading into hell as we know it today. And that's brutal, man. That sucks. Yeah. Guy's having a bad day.
Super sucks.
Super sucks.
No second chances, no appeal. Just go sit in the corner for all time.
Right. And as Jakaad turns into hell and Davoth is trapped in the life sphere, obviously the people of Jakaad aren't going to stay the same after that. They slowly degrade and become demonic forms and citizens of hell. So imagine whenever you're playing Doom next time, when you're the Slayer and you're chopping heads off and, you know, dismembering and blasting and burning and all that, that the demons you're killing likely used to be perfectly ordinary people who just wanted to live forever, man. I mean, can't blame them, can you?
I also want to take the moment to think about how after the father put Davoth into the life sphere. Mm-hmm. And just watching the place that he was going to create, just the perfect life of Jakaad, just turn into literal hell. He just turns his sights on a new project and is like, well, third time's the charm. This one I'll get right.
You've got to admire the boundless optimism of the father to just, you know, oh, well, I'll get him next time. You know, just that one didn't work out, but hey, that's the process.
Good God.
But yeah, I mean, you know, even though he was imprisoned and his realm was destroyed basically and corrupted, Devoth still didn't give up. That's the most amazing thing about this character. He, you know, even though he's trapped in the life sphere, he continued to try to reach out and influence his people, the Jakaadians, I'll call them, who were becoming demons. He would try to whisper forbidden knowledge to them and guide them in their quest to, you know, continue seeking eternal life, even as they were becoming demons. And so, like, even though he was basically destroyed by the father and, you know, reduced to rubble and stripped of his power, Devoth continued to want the best for his people. He tried to keep them on that path toward ascendance and immortality. So his motivations never changed. He got a little resentful, but naturally, but he still wanted,
yeah,
he still wanted the people of Jakaad to benefit.
Yeah, and I would also say, let's draw another parallel to the Slayer, who came from a different Earth, or at least like a different universe Earth, went through hell, somehow came out on the other side to Argenta, and fought for those people, because they were still his people. And then he finds the new Earth, once he's like trapped in hell for God knows how long. And it also shows the kind of determination and unending, you know, efforts that he went through to protect his Earth, even though it wasn't technically the Earth that he might have grown up in. Mm-hmm. It was still that place, his people, his realm.
It was still humanity, and that was still his responsibility to fight for. That's a great point. That's a really great similarity between Devoth and the Slayer, is that no matter what happens to them, they keep fighting. They don't give up. These guys are not quitters at all. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, but stick around. We'll be right back.
Commander, I apologize for the interruption. You have an important incoming transmission. Lore Party hosts Abu Zafar and Leah Wiggins would like to let you know that they're jumping through the Omega 4 relay and returning to the world of Mass Effect. They're hoping you'll join them on the Normandy and be a part of the crew. Just look for the Mass Effect episodes in the main Lore Party feed. End of transmission. Returning you to your episode.
Overall, this kind of story, this tragic tale of the Paradise of Jakaad becoming the horrible nightmare realm of hell, it gives us a better idea of why the Lords of Hell and the demonic hordes that they command behave the way they do. If your kind, demonkind, is descended from a people who, you know, had limited lifespans, but they were led by a primeval power in an endless quest for immortality, it kind of lets us glimpse into, you know, how demons think, if that makes sense. Like, you know, you look at the demons of the Doomiverse and you don't really imagine there's a lot of higher reasoning going on behind.
Kill, meat, 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 blood, right. blood, guts, guts, guts.
But knowing this story, you kind of gain a better understanding of, like, they have a hunger.
It is a pain in their stomach, in their very soul that aches.
Yeah. It's like a void in their soul that can only be filled by consumption, because they are descended from a civilization that was bent towards an endless quest for immortality. Their madness and their bloodlust, there's a method to it. There's a reason for it. And it does play into that angle of it being a tragic civilization that was lost and brought low by its ambition. We come back to the cost of ambition. Like, the people of Jakaad had this insatiable hunger for immortality, and they kind of got it in a way, because demons, in a way, can't be killed. They sort of return to hell and are remade.
So I think this also just goes with the other themes that we were talking about in our Doom series about ambition, how we saw with the UAC and the Conmaker in Erdak. It's this ambition, all of them almost kind of striving to, at the very least, build on top of hell that we now know as Jakkad, which in and of itself was almost the peak manifestation of ambition.
Yeah, no, I really like that there is this common thread of ambition being dangerous in the Doom universe, but at the same time, there's also this flip side of certain characters who kind of understand that overreaching and taking your mission too far can have dire consequences, but they don't care because they know what they're doing is either just what they have to do, or it's the right thing to do in the long run, or for the people they care about. And that brings us back to this interesting dichotomy between the Slayer and Devoth, because, you know, playing through Doom Eternal, we've talked extensively about how there is sort of an established cosmic order to the world in Doom Eternal. And when the Slayer sort of defies Erdak and makes powerful enemies by saving Earth, he's overthrowing that order. He's going against heaven itself and obviously continuing his war against hell at the cost of everything else because he wants to save Earth. It all comes back to this. There's this one thing that's important to him and everything else can be sacrificed.
And what's really great is I'm looking forward to part two, because this really does flip a lot of shit on its head, especially about the Slayer. First of all, I can't wait to see this fight because see this. This is literally going to be two very powerful entities who have no other ambition in life than to protect their people. Their people are in peril. They are both under duress. And you have a literal unstoppable force going against an immovable object.
Oh, yeah.
They are not the same, but they are almost exactly opposite. That this is going to be a very interesting fight, or at least conflict,
yeah.
Unless they team up and kill the father and Erdak and everything. That would be amazing.
That'd be crazy. I can't wait. I'm hyped up.
And just my final thoughts on all of this is one of our episodes from the Doom series was that what we had assumed was that the Slayer is just this harbinger of correction in the universe. When the laws of this universe are broken, something or someone comes to correct it. And that is the Slayer, or at least was until this happens. And now, like, it feels like that role is somewhat diminished by the fact that obviously the game is telling us he is not a copy, but like a very much very similar in that role as Devoth was.
Yeah.
And is he still just some guy now? Is he still that? Or is he just human Lucifer in a sense? And I'm not sure if that's good or if that's bad, but I still feel like at the very least, maybe Devoth was that answer to the breaking of the laws of the universe back in his time. Mm. Maybe that's the reason why we see the Doomslayer here and looking like Devoth, is because they both have played the same role. And while he was gone in the life sphere, the Slayer is kind of picking up that mantle as things started to become unbalanced in the universe again.
Interesting. That's a really good question. It is kind of open to interpretation, like what the deal is with Devoth looking like the Slayer. They look like twins, basically. They look like copies of each other. And there's a bit of speculation there that we could do where it's like, oh, did Devoth just choose to take that form to like kind of get inside the Slayer's head? Or is that really what he truly looks like? But there's also Vega, who is still existing in some form at the end of the DLC. He explains that Devoth is, I think, quote unquote, you in their world. So it's like Hell's version of the Slayer. That might lend credence to what you said, Bruce, where it's like maybe they are just different versions of each other, kind of across timelines, across dimensions. Maybe they are cut from the same cloth, but just put to different uses. Like Devoth was the Slayer before the Slayer existed. He was that guy who was the champion of his chosen people. And then later on, when humans needed a champion, the Slayer stepped up.
Either way, this is going to be an amazing title fight.
Hell yes. I'm buying my tickets right now. I will be there front row, courtside. Can't wait.
Right after Kong versus Godzilla.
Kong versus Godzilla is the warm-up. That's like the opening. It's the opening match. Can't wait.
Well, that about wraps it up. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow the show. Be sure to connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at lore_party. Check out our YouTube page for bonus videos and highlights. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.